Okay, the committee will come into order. Before we start, the rules for this committee, this is our first committee hearing. The rules for this committee is, we'll operate, now how about this? The three of us will make rules as we go along. No, we'll operate under the Health Human Service policy rules. And so, keep that in mind. I might be a little bit flexible as well. But the intention of my committee is some of the less controversial bills, we're going to roll into a big omnibus bill. And at the end, we'll have that go out of this committee as the licensing subcommittee bill, and all the more controversial bills, they'll go on their own. So it looks like we have a quorum, and there are no minutes yet, so why don't we go right ahead to the first bill on the calendar. I will move House File 57 to be possibly included in the omnibus bill. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 57 is a fairly technical bill. It relates to advisory councils that we have, and just a little bit of background. The Board of Medical Practice doesn't just regulate doctors, but has a number of subspecialties or subgroups in it, MDs, like physician's assistants, acupuncture folks, respiratory care people. So the Board of Medical Practice regulates those groups, but they have advisory groups to that board made up of, like, physician's assistants, for instance. And so what this bill does, those advisory boards are set to expire in June of this year, and this will, well, under the language as it's currently written, would extend that out to 2015. And I'd actually like, if the chair would move an amendment for me, what the Senate did was just eliminate the sunset for these advisory boards. The Board of Medical Practice keeps going, and so it makes sense to keep those advisory boards. The last section deals with kind of a different kind of animal, which relates to chemical dependency and those kind of issues for medical practitioners, and sets up a joint board. But we can let the witness talk more about that. But if the chair, what I'd like to do basically is, instead of extending it to 2015, eliminate any language related to the sunsets. So on line 1.10 would be a period after 15.059, eliminate all the language after that. Similarly, the same exact amendments on line 1.13 and 1.14. The same change on 1.17 and on 1.20. And then eliminate line, or actually put an X across what's now 2.32.
Okay. I'll move that provision. We have to take a vote on that, don't we?
If we approve this, there'll be less work for the subcommittee to do. What will we do then? These critical bills of ours.
We'll make up the
rules. You can handle it somehow. Okay.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, if we could just have the testifier. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robert Leach. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice. I think that Representative Thiessen has pretty well summed up our position on this. The board essentially relies on its advisory councils to provide expert opinion on credentialing and disciplinary matters to the board. Because, as he stated, we regulate five other professions in addition to physicians. But by statute, membership on the board is limited to physicians and public members. And so these advisory councils have become an integral part in the board's decision-making process relating to the other professions that we regulate. In addition, all of the health licensing boards have established and fund a health professional services program, which is a non-disciplinary confidential monitoring program for impaired health professionals. And that program utilizes an advisory committee in much the same way that we utilize our advisory council. Members of the advisory committee for the program are made up of representatives from the professional associations of each of the participating professions, and they too are scheduled to sunset in June of this year. And so as Representative Thiessen has stated, this would either extend those sunset dates out to 2015 or hopefully eliminate the sunset provision entirely so we don't have to keep coming back here and wasting your time and ours.
Thank you.
We look at this as a housekeeping matter. It's non-controversial, and I'll be happy to try to answer any questions committee members may have.
I personally don't like sunset. If I have my way, I'll get rid of all the sunsets myself. But are there any questions from the members? Okay.
Mine's a broader question since I'm new to this aspect of the work here at the legislature. In terms of you stating that the board only has officially on it physicians, and I believe you said members of the public or citizens to the effect. Has there been any discussion, and this may be heretical to say this, but about changing that and making the board of medical practices something other than physicians into the public and include those other professions more formally?
Mr. Leach?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, yes, there has been discussion in the past about that. Creating other positions on the board, I mean, the board's already, we have 16 board members. Bringing other health professions in for the amount of work that's actually done by the board relating to those other professions really would not be, I don't think, feasible. The advisory council seemed to work just fine. Everybody receives a $55 per diem, so there would be no cost savings involved. And quite frankly, the majority of the complaints, which is the workload of the board, of the complaints we receive each year, the majority of those complaints have to do with physicians. A very small percentage of the complaints we receive are against the other health professions we regulate.
And just to clarify, the groups here that are regulated are physicians assistants, acupuncturists, respiratory care practitioners, licensed traditional midwives, and you know, we have other boards like the Board of Dentistry that actually regulate their own profession. So there's a whole other set of boards that aren't regulated by the Board of Medical Practices.
One quick call. Well, it just seems like in today's world, the role, you know, there's physicians, physician assistants, and there's practitioners. You know, there's some functions are similarly carried out by some of these, by all three of these. And so I was wondering if those lines, I know there are lines between them, but whether, you know, these complaints, I would think, would also be against these other two categories, where the physician just two some of the time. So I'm just curious about that. Thank you.
Yeah, very small percentage of our complaints are against public or against physician assistants.
Representative Abler.
Well, just a question, Mr. Chair, and maybe so each can comment. It seems like these relationships are pretty good, where the advisory committees do their work. And now, when it comes to rulemaking for a certain group, acupuncturists or whatever, does the board have to approve the rules that they suggest and then put those off for rulemaking? Is that how it works in practice? And does the board actually look them over, or just kind of take the word of the advisory council if there are good rules?
Mr. Leach.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, in my tenure as executive director with the board, there haven't been any rules that have related to those other professions. Or if the professional association were to come to the board and ask the board to engage in rules, then the board would have to make that decision at the time. The advisory council's business is not actually to propose rules relating to the profession.
All right. Thank you for coming. Like I said, it's been moved to roll this over to the hospital inclusion, the omnibus bill.
Okay.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next, House File 212, Liebman. The chair will also move House File 212 for possible inclusion. Representative Liebling, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Tina Liebling, State Representative from District 30A in Rochester. And with me I have Frank Yossi, who's the Government Relations, I don't know what the exact title is, but for Mayo Clinic. And House File 212, which is before you members, is really a pretty simple bill. Back in 2004, this statute was amended. Well, let me back up a little bit. Physicians who need to be credentialed in Minnesota, in particular foreign medical graduates, need to have their credentials verified. And the way this is done now is through the Federal Credentials Verification Service of the U.S. Federation of State Medical Boards. This law was amended in 2004 to require that these this credential verification be done in this way. And it seemed like a good concept at the time, but in fact it hasn't worked out very well. And what this bill does is simply make it permissive, again, not mandatory, so that other avenues can be used for this verification process. And I'm going to let Mr. Yossi take it from here and explain more about the bill.
Mr. Yossi.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Frank Yossi. I represent Mayo Clinic here today. As Representative Liebling said, this was a bill that was passed in 2004. It was a bill of the Board of Medical Practice who was trying to be, I think, a good soldier and respond to its national board. And the thought was that things could be done more efficiently by the national organization. Unfortunately, the workload and demand was enormous and immense. And on top of that, I think it's also fair to say that the national board had not set up appropriate procedures. This has been a complete nightmare. This is primarily for Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota because it applies only to international medical graduates. And I think these two organizations staff most of those folks. It has made it very difficult for international medical graduates to get credentialed in the U.S. and very costly. And at times we have people in Rochester or on the Twin Cities campus of the university who cannot practice because they have been held up in the bureaucracy. What this would do, as Representative Liebling mentioned, would make this permissive as opposed to required. I think it's fair to say that if the National Credentials Organization got this routinized and got better at it, that we may well look to be using them. But it has been an enormous problem. The bill, fortunately, passed in both houses last year, and unfortunately, didn't get to the floor. Didn't get to conference committee. So I think that's some indication of its lack of controversy and the fact that, it in some senses, it's a housekeeping bill. So we appreciate your support.
Mr. Yossi.
Yeah.
How many people are we talking about?
I suspect it's 15, 20, 25 a year at Mayo.
Okay. Are there any questions from the members? Okay, that was quick. If you know you have the vote. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Can I add something under this? Well,
sure.
No, I'm serious. Kidding. That was just a little amendment I was going to slip on.
Thank you,
members. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Members.
Abler. That's an Abler. You want to move your own bill, or you want the chair to do it? No.
The worst case is just trying to pass. I'm happy to defer to the chair.
No, you can move it. Go ahead.
I'll move the bill, Mr. Chair.
For possible inclusion.
In your honor. Okay.
House File 336.
And there's an amendment, too, Mr. Chair. If I can move the A1 amendment, which will put the bill in the order that we want.
Representative Abler moves the A1 amendment. Are there any discussions on?
So we'll discuss the bill as amended if it's okay with the committee.
All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay.
This is Move the on. Most collaborative, happy committee, I think. And just to mention to the members, this subcommittee is dealing with what you might consider minutia, but it's a minutia that helps these professional organizations and licensing boards do their work. We've come to expect, in Minnesota in particular, a very high standard of credential and a high standard of training on the part of our professionals. And every so often, and you heard three or four bills today, and you'll hear another handful as the session wears on, we'll have this omnibus bill, which will be 134 votes green probably. About matters that relate to these various professions. The House, I think, relies on this group to do the homework and make sure they truly are not just housekeeping, but they're good policy decisions. Occasionally there'll be some fights over the interfaces between various professions, and you'll see a few of those. And that makes it kind of interesting, you know, count votes and have a vote on some of those matters yet to come. But on a good day, we find work to do that everybody says this is reasonable, and it's as contentious as the first two bills are, which is not very. This next bill is one of those. And it has to do with, I'll let my witness say it's not something for her to talk about, but this doesn't affect hearing aid dispensers, as best I know, so just so people are nervous. And in the past, that's been an area of interface which has been contentious in this little niche. And I don't believe it fences anybody out. And those are concerns I have. Fencing is where you used to think you could do something, now you can't. And so that's always a question you want to ask when you change a licensure criteria. Anyway, so with that in mind, I'll just turn the whole bill over to my witness who can describe it to you and then she can.
Hello, and I'm Becky Joplin Martin. I'm an audiologist at Mayo Clinic. Should have taken a bus up here today, I guess, maybe. I am current president of the Minnesota Academy of Audiology. The changes that are suggested here do reflect a change in current practice to current practice to the national standards that are already in place for audiologists. There are no more master's programs for audiologists, no more graduate programs that terminate in a master's degree. They all are either a doctor of audiology or a PhD in audiology. There are at least seven other states that have already enacted similar legislation, and there are several others that are already in the works. As you've mentioned, this is definitely or has been kind of an interesting group dynamic, if you will, between several different potential groups here. So we, in looking at working with this, we've actually contacted the various stakeholders that we've worked with in the past to make sure that they know that we are not intending to fence anybody or to basically make any changes that would affect any others. In our discussions with the people who have responded to us so far, the Minnesota Department of Health, the Minnesota Speech Language Hearing Association, and the Minnesota Academy of Otolaryngologists have all indicated that they feel pretty neutral or support, or would either be neutral or supportive to all of these issues. Really, this is just an intent to raise the requirements for audiology, for new audiology applicants to have a doctoral degree to get a license.
Any questions from the members? Representative Norton.
Thank you. Chair, members, and testifiers, if I'm understanding this correctly, to date, you have been able to practice with a bachelor's degree?
A master's degree.
With a master's, and so the change to speech pathology is simply additional language, not changing the law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, this is really just to separate, it actually separates out because we said the same thing for speech pathologists and audiologists. So it separates them out, leaves the speech pathology requirements the same, and changes those for the audiologist.
And changes for the audiologist. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're not going to hear from speech pathologists about
correct.
The changes.
Correct. And like I said, the Minnesota Speech Language Hearing Association is one of those that has said that they're not worried about it.
Okay, I think
that's
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Abler.
I'm going to ask the witness to answer a question. If I'm just going to also offer a thought. I just want to make sure it's on the record, that it's clear. And it's just for the sake of the members of the subcommittee. You're going to hear a group come forward with an idea, and some other groups oppose the ideas. And there's, in terms of who's involved in a lot of these groups, you've got a board that oversees them, or the Department of Health. That's who licenses them. And they may often have ideas. Then you also have one or more professional associations. Then you also have individual members, and then you have professions that have similar functions. And so when you get them all together, probably it's a good idea. But it still may not be, and it's our judgment then to decide if that's a good idea. Sometimes you'll have two associations who don't agree. Then you have to pick a winner and a loser. Those are more difficult. In this case, this is coming from one of the associations with the consent of the board, and at least with the agreements of all the parties. But as you listen to different things, you'll want to just understand the players. And it gets fascinating. Another question I have, if you would mind. My answer to the question, if that guy from South Dakota quits advertising and people actually come back to Minnesota and one of your licensees from there wants to come to Minnesota and they're only a master's, they can still come, right?
That's correct.
Ms. Martin.
Yeah, Chairman Tell and Representative. The change is only for people, for those graduating from here on out. So someone who has been practicing in another state would already qualify for that.
Thank you.
Are there any testifiers from the audience that would like to testify on this as well? Well, Representative Abert, as the chair for this committee, I would like to have bills that gets worked out a little bit before it gets here. So anyone in the audience who is listening to that, I prefer that. If you need to work it out in my office, we'll do that too. But thank you. Next, I think we have Otremba, Representative Otremba. I'll move House File 645 for possible inclusion as well. So this might be probably the quickest, nicest hearing we're going to have in this committee. Down the road, I think other bills are coming up in the pipeline, so that might not be as quick as this. So, Representative Otremba.
Mr. Chair and members, this is House File 645, and basically what this does is modify provisions for individuals operating X-ray machines. I think in my innocence I thought that all of the X-ray technicians were getting a comprehensive test, and I found through friends of mine that that wasn't the case. And so we have two testifiers today, and I think we'll start with Linda Koster.
Representative Trumbull, before you go, did you want me to move the amendment as well? Or?
Well, we can talk about that a little minute. And someone came, and you look on page 2, line 231, and do you have the statute? We looked at this. And someone had a concern that we didn't have registered dental assistants. But when you look at the statute, it looks like they are under the dentistry board, and so that I think that they're covered already. If they still aren't comfortable, I'm willing to propose the amendment. But in looking at the statute, it seems pretty clear. But like I said, if they're nervous about it, I'm willing to put it in, because when you look, they've already talked about dentistry and dental hygiene, and so
if you don't want to move it now, it's been rolled over, so we could still work
and,
on it.
Right, and maybe after Ms. Koster talks and they talk, it'll become clearer. But I certainly want to include them in under the dentistry board if it's not clear enough in statute.
Ms. Koster.
Thank you. My name is Linda Koster, and I would like to thank Representative Tao and the members of the committee for this opportunity to provide testimony supporting the change in the minimum requirements for those who operate X-ray equipment for use on humans. I would also like to thank Representative Otremba and the co-authors of this bill for recognizing the need for the change in this law. I am a certified and registered radiologic technologist. In order to become certified, I attended a 2-year nationally accredited radiography program and successfully completed an exam to become certified. I am currently the board chairman of the Minnesota Society of Radiologic Technologists. The MSRT is a professional organization consisting of registered radiologic technologists and imaging professionals. Part of our mission is to promote quality patient care. Quality patient care in radiology is twofold. One being the technical quality of the images to ensure a rapid and accurate diagnosis, the other being containment of the cost of health care. In order to obtain high-quality images, it is important that there be an adequate understanding of the factors and steps needed to achieve the end result. If there is this understanding, the physician is given adequate information to make a proper diagnosis, and the time required for each exam and the cost for materials is acceptable. However, if there is not an adequate understanding of these things, the quality of the imaging suffers and additional resources in time and materials are used. The entire premise of this proposed legislation is to address these issues to increase the productivity and decrease the cost incurred in medical practice. We understand that there may be the perception that anyone who proposes legislation stands to personally gain from it. However, this does not apply in this situation. We recognize that the X-ray operator is a valuable part of the medical team, especially in situations where the need for imaging is sporadic and the types of exams being performed are of the routine type. With three times more X-ray machines than at registered radiologic technologists in the state of Minnesota, we have ample opportunity for employment. Also, in states with long-standing limited operator requirements, it has been shown that these operator requirements do not translate into higher salary increases for registered technologists. Currently, in order to take X-rays in the state of Minnesota, and individuals must pass a test that includes, by statute, the topics of basic radiation safety, proper use of the equipment, darkroom, film processing, and quality and assurance procedures. However, this test does not include very critical aspects of obtaining a quality X-ray, such as anatomy and pathology, how to properly position the patient in order to X-ray the part of the body the physician is interested in, or what exposure factors to use in order to obtain a diagnostic X-ray. This bill simply proposes that anyone who performs X-rays successfully complete a nationally recognized exam that covers all of the things needed to obtain a diagnostic X-ray, including anatomy, positioning, and technical factors. Currently, 27 states use a nationally recognized exam, some since 1985. We are not proposing prerequisite education or continuing education. This is not a proposal to mandate that those who take X-rays have a license to do so. The Department of Health inspects facilities who have X-ray machines on a regular basis. During these inspections, the facility must show that those taking X-rays have passed the current X-ray operator exam. We are not proposing that this change. The impact on medical practice is nothing but positive. Again, better images result in quicker and more accurate diagnosis. The increased productivity and decreased material costs positively affect the bottom line. The initial cost is minimal. The current cost of the X-ray operator exam, which is paid for by the operators themselves, is $45 to $55. The cost for a nationally recognized exam is $70 to $75. In conclusion, we feel that changing the minimum requirements for those performing X-ray exams will increase the efficiency of medical practice and increase the quality of care that we provide for our patients. I have with me Eugene Frank, who is going to go into a little bit more detail about the differences between X-ray operators and radiologic technologists, and has a couple of cases to show you as well.
Mr. Frank, introduce yourself and your, I guess, who you work for.
Thank you very much. My name is Gene Frank, and I work for Riverlands Community College in Austin, Minnesota, where I'm the director of the radiography school there. I've been a registered radiologic technologist in Minnesota for 37 years, and I just want to share two things with your committee to add to what Linda has stated. First, I want to talk about the education required to be a registered radiologic technologist like Linda and myself, and then also the limited X-ray machine operator. And then I want to share, too, I'll just put my X-ray view box up here. We thought it would be helpful for you to see two examples of what we run into from limited X-ray machine operators and maybe why we're seeking support for a change in the examination that the limited operators write to a nationally recognized exam. Well, radiologic technologists attend six semesters of college, which is 3 years of regular college work, and our training includes direct and comprehensive patient care work in the large hospitals and clinics throughout Minnesota. We write a national certification examination, and we're required to participate in continuing education. We work in the medium to large hospitals and clinics throughout Minnesota where comprehensive radiology is performed. limited x-ray machine operators receive no formal education. They're hired by smaller hospitals and clinics throughout Minnesota because they're needed there. There's not enough radiologic technologists to cover all of these facilities. But they're hired in the smaller hospitals and clinics, and they're trained on the job. In most instances, their work is indeed limited. However, they do use ionizing radiation on patients, including children and actually any type of patient. They do perform somewhat of a limited range of examinations, such as chest and extremity radiographies, but in some facilities they do moderately comprehensive work, and again with no training. Although they do write the current exam in Minnesota, it's not recognized by any approving body. It covers, as Linda said, only one of five technical areas required to perform radiography. A nationally recognized exam, as Linda stated, will cover all the categories needed to perform an X-ray exam to standard. So before I show you the radiographs here, the major issue with the limited X-ray machine operators is that they simply do not know enough about the complex technical factors of radiation and setting the equipment up to get the proper density on the film, to get the proper contrast, and to stay within the appropriate dose. They simply do not understand the concept of what a diagnostic or a non-diagnostic radiograph is because they're trained on the job. And so to show you what they encounter, what they constantly come to us in the large hospitals and clinics for help with, and we do the best we can to help them, but we're busy doing our jobs, I'll show you, if you'd allow me just a moment to set up the view box, two examples of what happens out there in the real world with the limited operator.
While Mr. Frank is setting up, are there any questions from the committee that Ms. Bunn? Representative Bunn, that's
right. Thank you. My question to either of the testifiers is, in terms of moving to this higher standard of a test that covers all five of these areas that you mentioned, technical areas rather than just the one, to make sure they're better prepared to do the work that they're actually sometimes being asked to do, in your case, you achieve that knowledge through the 3 years of training and the six semesters. In the case of limited currently, there's no specified way they're supposed to get this knowledge. Realistically speaking, if this was implemented, what would be their paths for obtaining the knowledge less necessary to pass this nation, this national level test?
Ms. Costa?
Other than boosting themselves up to your level and going back to school.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bunn, there are a couple of schools within the state that do have limited operator programs, and we believe that this will prompt some of the community college systems. There actually has been some talk within the radiography programs within the community college system to start limited operator programs. Same way a lot of these operators are medical assistants. So it would prompt them to begin programs within the medical assistant program.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, I know in my community where it's pretty small, some of them have actually done it through book work and have tested really high. In fact, not too long ago, they were doing a procedure with a physician, and they were just elated at how well he could do, because they're used to having some of those the people there that haven't studied and were just on the job sort of thing. So it can be successful. You have to be driven, of course, mm-hmm. but that is a way to do it also.
Representative Bunn.
Just to follow up, so conceivably, so they could either go to a formal program if they're going to be established, or some are established through their own efforts, or I was also had in my mind was, you know, some online learning opportunities. It's a national test that maybe there's some national associations that would have online for a fee. You could pay your several hundred dollars and go actually study online and meet the requirements to pass the test. So.
Mr. Frank.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn.
Yeah.
If I may add, the Minnesota Society of Radiologic Technologists does put on seminars for limited operators who are going to be hired because they cannot perform limited X-ray work before they write the current exam. So we do put on seminars around the state when necessary. There are several groups that go out, for example, to a hospital and a clinic. They actually train them, which is good. But I will admit, many of them receive nothing. And some of them can learn from the previous person because, as I said, most of them are doing a fairly narrow range of X-rays that can be learned by them.
After Representative Fritz, we'll go to the...
But just to this point, and in my experience back in Faribault, we have LPNs in some of these clinics who do that, who are the, you know, we do it all. And I just wondered about a grandfather clause, if there was an opportunity to grandfather them in with that, because they're doing their CEUs and they're keeping up their license, if those nurses in those small clinics would have that opportunity.
Ms. Costa?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fritz, thank you for asking that. In the bill, we are asking that anyone who is new begin this process, and I believe the date of the effective date is January 1st of 2008. As far as continuing education goes, in so many of these situations, the LPNs and the nurses and the medical assistants who do have continuing education, it's specific to the LPN. So there's some lacking in the continuing education portion of it when it comes to it being X-ray specific, which is another thing our organization does. That's one of our main focuses, is doing continuing education in those kinds of situations.
Thank you.
Mr. Frank, why don't you go ahead with your demonstration, then we'll do more. Can you wait, Representative Norton?
Sure.
Okay.
I just want to point out two examples of what happens. This is a chest X-ray that was performed by a limited operator. The image is overexposed and it's very dark, as you can see. The conditions in here are not like in the hospital setting, but this X-ray actually contains a fairly good-sized cancer, but it was missed because of the overexposure. Even the physician could not see the tumor. Now, technically, the limited operator did not make a mistake here. She simply did not know what a correct exposure was or how to manipulate the machine to get it to the correct exposure. This is an actual case. The patient was sent home but continued to have symptoms. The patient went to a large clinic about 10 months later, and again, a chest X-ray was ordered, and this was the chest X-ray that was done. You'll see the difference right away in the contrast and the density of how much clearer it is. Now, this image contains much better density and contrast. Most importantly, the cancerous tumor stands out right here. There's a 3-centimeter cancerous tumor. The patient unfortunately died. The tumor was missed on the initial radiograph because it was too dark. The family sued, and a multi-million-dollar settlement was approved by the court. And again, you know, we kind of feel for these limited operators who just don't know what to do in those situations. They take the X-ray and send it through, and they think that's all that is needed. In another example, it's very common in this type of work to overexpose because the limited operators want us. There's a natural tendency to set more X-rays so that they think that it's better to have it dark and overexposed, which is always not the case. Here's another example of a dark X-ray, and there is a fracture on there. It's shown a little bit more. It's overexposed, but this had to be repeated on the patient, again, because the doctor needs more information. And just to show you an example of a properly exposed forearm with a fracture on it, done by a radiologic technologist. You can see, you know, again, this is a copy, a much better contrast and density film, and much easier to see the fracture in the soft tissue. So we thought we would share with you, two examples of what happens when the limited operators are doing x-rays. And in both of these instances, the technical factors that would have been required for them to get the proper exposure, they don't know how to do that because they're not tested on that. And we believe that if they're tested on that, they'll at least have the basis for making the correct adjustments, which, by the way, are not real difficult. They just don't know how. Thank you very much for allowing us to show us.
Representative Norton.
Hi. Yes, Chair Towne, members. I do have, you covered most of the questions that I had. If I'm understanding correctly, it used to be that the commissioner could determine what test was being used, and I assume they got some assistance to do that, and now you're being very specific, and it sounds like there are national exams out there that you're recommending one that is being used in multiple states, 27, I believe you said. So it's going to be a very specific test that we know to be good, if I understand that correctly. The questions I had was primarily with the limited machine operators because I saw the criterion the standards less defined. You said the examination should include, but you don't have a specific exam or certification, as I understand it, like you do for the beginning. So I wondered how will those standards be designed, or again, is that going to be up to the commissioner to decide how the limited operators are tested? So that was one question, and then I'll just throw on the end. The other one had to do with rural impact. It does appear that there could be some rural impact here, already knowing that medical help is hard to come by in some rural areas. Will this make it more difficult? If you could just address those.
Ms. Custer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Norton, as far as the exam, The standards are very specific, and those are to help guide the commissioner to determine what standards a national exam must meet in order to be included in. There are certain exams that are out there that already are approved and are national in scope, but this gives the commissioner some guidelines to go by in case there is anyone else who would like to provide the exam, that they have the mechanism to do that as well. As far as the rural impact, I appreciate you asking me that. I'm from rural Nebraska, and so I understand the rural
impact.
Yeah. And we'll talk. And so this one of the reasons we chose not to make it retroactive is so that the continuance of care can be there and make the future be better. Naturally, we would like to make it retroactive, and if we start providing a little bit more focused continuing education and those kinds of things for these individuals, it will get better. And as the new people get into these practices, they'll be able to help the current providers as well. So the impact we feel will be minimal as far as delivery of service.
Thank you.
Mr. Frank. How big is the problem? You show us some examples of the situation. How big is the problem out there?
Mr. Chairman, well, it's difficult to quantify, but there are about 3,800, maybe 4,000 radiographers in the state of Minnesota.
Correct.
Okay. One of our colleagues is in the back who's more familiar with those numbers. Thank you. We believe that there's probably an equal number of limited operators. It's about half and half. Because if you look at the state of Minnesota, there's probably five or six small hospitals, doctors' practices, and clinics out there for every one, Mankato Hospital, Winona Hospital, Twin Cities Hospital, and so on. And that's where all of these individuals are working. It's about half and half. So we've always felt half of the citizens of the state of Minnesota are having their x-rays done today by a limited x-ray machine operator.
Are there any more questions? Representative Abrams?
Sure, thank you. And I think I'm a co-author on this bill. I like the idea, but I just have a couple questions about the bill. Just so I can be clear, and I have a couple questions. But so the first section of the bill is for the current high standard, just clarifying what tests and so on. That's not going to make any big change in the world. Actually, gives some flexibility. Is that correct? The second part has limited the examination for this other category of person, which is the new person, new group you've addressed here. And then you have some exemptions and variances. Is the department here? Is it, maybe they want to come up and answer a question for me. Because you talked in the supportive materials, it talks about a 75 question test, and what sort of Representative Norton was talking about. It doesn't say 75 questions. It doesn't say that the test is going to be kind of a it's not going to be a basic test. This test, actually, in the language given there, forgive me for not trusting. But the language actually allows for a very comprehensive test if the department so was inclined. And maybe some of us think that's a great idea. But if the intent, as you presented today, is to have a modest test that can be learned online without curriculum and so on, and that's a different bill for a different year probably, as we raise our, which I expect to be coming in 2 to 5 years. But could the department comment about how they would then interpret this language and what sort of test they might use? In fact, if there's one they've already chosen that meets this criteria, and they're going to stop there for now and leave it at that?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Linda Brummer from the Minnesota Department of Health. Looking at this, it doesn't have to change the way we do business dramatically, Representative Abler. What it is we have our standards in the statute and in the rule that we follow for the 75 questions. There are three third-party examining people who offer the exam in the state. What this does is it sort of makes the national exam the standard that we have to compare things against. And the department is neutral on this because we don't see that it dramatically changes what we do. We currently do not certify, register, license, whatever you want to call, X-ray technologists. The point at which Ms. Koster stated, the point at which it comes into play is on the inspection at the X-ray facility. We check to make sure the people there have passed the tests, have their credentials on site, as you know. So I don't see the only, there's a fine point in process that I plan to work with these people on is that I understand in the ARRT process, the Department of Health has to review the applications to take the exam. And we currently do not do that. We review the contents of the exam, but the applications themselves, we're hoping, can be just sent to the ARRT and not have to go through the Department of Health. But that again, is just a fine point.
Sure. And so, there's some rules that aren't referenced in front of me here, so you don't plan to change much of what you have, and so you're going to continue current practice. And I think people are comfortable with that. I think if you had a higher bar today, people are not comfortable with that yet, and so that's a different discussion. So is that, if I summarize your answer, is that what you're...
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, essentially, yes.
Okay, and I have another question, Mr. Chair. On the, there's some exceptions, which I think are well done, and then that question about the dental part. But on line 311, you talk about extreme hardship. So in the rural piece, and I don't know, from what I understand, I'm under the chiropractic board, so we passed the test harder than this one, but... And it's also hard to take X-rays at certain times. You know, the more you do it, the better, and it's good that we're moving into that way. I respect, that's why I support the bill. But I don't know what extreme hardship would be, but how would the department interpret extreme hardship compared to hardship? And so is anybody going to qualify with this? And how would you determine that it's extreme hardship? They're losing their house, or can you comment about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, that's one of the reasons I came to the hearing today, to find out what people felt. We don't have rules on this right now, and so I'm not sure what criteria we're supposed to use on that.
Mr. Chair, maybe the author or the witness could just comment on what they intend extreme to be, because now we're giving the department rules, and the department does what we want them to do, at least most of the time. We have our days, and we have a chat, and we pass them the bill. But maybe they could comment about the intent and see if we agree that that's a good intent, and then the department can use that as guidance.
Yeah, you know, this is going to get laid over, and I think we could continue to work on language that would identify that a little bit more. But now, Ms. Costa.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I'd like to address a couple of points, and that being the exam itself. The exam that we're proposing, it being national, the intent is it to be national in scope so that we know that the quality of the exam is there and that it be complete, that it cover all of the aspects of what it takes to obtain a good X-ray, and that it be national in scope and approved by one of the list of bodies that approve these. That's the intent. The intent, as far as the hardship goes, that intent is for the X-ray operator to do things outside of what has been defined as their scope, meaning CT, contrast media studies, fluoroscopy, and those kinds of things. When we met with the MMA, which we did, and they have chosen to remain neutral on this, when we met with the MMA, it came up that there are certain rural sites that are first-line providers that in situations they may only have one registered technologist to do CT there. And that registered technologist can't be on call 24/7, 365 days a year. So if there's a hardship that service will not be provided, then they can go through the department. The intent is that they go through the Department of Health process to determine that services will not be provided if the X-ray operator cannot perform these functions.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I think that your advice about little work on this section might be in order. I think the hospitals want to talk, but I think that as I read this, mm-hmm. it read to me that like the person just couldn't get around to taking the test and they were just too busy. And so I think what you're meaning is that to do a limited X-ray, you have to pass this test.
Correct.
There's no waiver for that. But in terms of if you want to go beyond in this middle ground where you would extend to some other services that are beyond the scope of a limited operator, they could continue to do that as they have been, given that there's a local need. And I think that you may want to redraft that a bit to make it more clear.
Thank you.
And maybe one thing also I want to comment on, just and then I think I'm done, is that, I'm curious how the phase-in works. So nobody has to. Everybody has to have this by July or January 1st of 08. Is that right, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, no. The people who are currently practicing remain where they're at without having to reexamine.
Okay.
It's only those who are coming into to beginning okay. to practice.
Michelle, that's a very low bar. So, and the final thing is there's no requirement for continuing ed year, which I expect will be in the bill 2 or 5 years from now. So, thank you.
Well, Mr.
Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm a rural person, and I want to have good quality care. And I could tell you a story, but I won't say the name, but the first X-ray found nothing. Went to another rural hospital, found something that wasn't. Went to another one and said, well, it's there, but it's not bad. And then went to Rochester and found out it was really bad. Only by somebody being very persistent, because they were still sick, did we go all the way to Rochester. I'm giving it away. And so I would definitely want to see that the CEU piece, because I don't want that to happen to somebody else. And so even though we're rural and we have a tough time getting some people, we just need to be aggressive in making sure that they want to take the test and want to come back, because we don't want to have a second class healthcare in rural Minnesota.
Looks like there's a testifier. State your name and the people you represent, and we'll take it from there.
Great. For the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. We have not taken an official position on this bill, but I just wanted to comment on a couple of the comments and questions that came up today. Representative Frist asked a very good question, and that was regarding nurses. And I noticed in the exemption, Mr. Frank said that nurses would be given an exemption. And if you look at the bottom of page 2, it lists the occupations that the exemption is given to. those who practice medicine, osteopathy, chiropractic, podiatry, dentistry, and dental hygiene, and nursing is not listed there. So either that's an oversight or it's a misrepresentation. So I thought it was important to point out to the committee that nursing is not listed on here. We also, just in my first perusal of the bill, I don't think the language regarding grandfathering current operators is very strong. The numbers that were given today, I became more interested in this bill as I was hearing the testimony. An equal number of professionals are what they call this lower level versus the higher level. And clearly that, as Representative Abler said, that is something we want to work toward, to get more people to the higher level. But this bill potentially has significant disruptions of care if half of the people currently doing x-rays in the state are not meeting this current requirement. So that's a lot of doctor's offices that are utilizing this lower level of x-ray technicians that would then be required to take the test. So either the grandfathering language needs to be stronger, or we need a longer phase in or something. So like I said, the Hospital Association has not yet taken a position, but the numbers that there are an equal number of lower level technicians compared to the higher number, that is a significant number of people taking that would need to take this test unless the grandfather language is stronger. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Trimble or Ms. Coster?
Mr. Chairman and the members of the committee, thank you for bringing that up. I welcome the opportunity to clear up some of those things. The intent of the bill is to grandfather current practitioners, and that's the intent. If we need to strengthen that language, we certainly don't have a problem with that. The nurses are not exempt. The reason for that is that in nursing school, from what I understand, there is no training in radiology or x-ray, and currently nurses who are practicing as x-ray operators have to pass the current exam. So there's no intent to exempt nurses. There never was any intent to exempt nurses, and they would fall into the same categories because of the fact that their educational system does not include x-ray. They would fall into the same categories as the x-ray operators now because they do now. They fall into that same category now.
Mr. Chair.
I'm Representative Abler.
I think this is one of your homework bills. Yeah. And I think that the author referenced desire for continuing ed, which I think makes a lot of sense. And even, you know, 5 hours a year would make a huge difference to somebody that's not expensive, and it can be done online. And for, I mean, some number that makes this at something. Because right now, what we have is they can pretty much just go start doing x-rays. And the test is not a high bar test. This is I asked the department in our hard way just so I would, you're not going to raise that up to be a high bar test. The tests that are currently involved for the ones that you all are very high bar tests, and a lot of criteria and very complex. These are positioning, you know, what's an elbow look like and how would you line up the joint to make sure you get through the joint the right way. Very simple technical things you ought to know to be able to do things that are comparable. And exposures and a little bit of the x-ray science to understand if you raise one number, you can know the other one, and for some people that are different sizes and try to get a good picture and all that. So, and I think that the grandfather should be, I'll work with if you want to help with this, but I think that this test is not a hard test, but it's a test that we, I think, by consensus, I think we think people should do. But I think we might require the people that exist in this currently to take some courses once in a while. And I think that you want to talk to you of all people are great author, Representative Trumbull, because you care about keeping the rural practices intact, yet you want to have good quality out there too. And I think that this is a low threshold. Good luck.
Yeah, I think the chair understands that this bill, particular bill here, we do need to work on it a little bit more. I think maybe work with Representative Fritz and Abler and come back with some good language, and we can move forward. We could potentially bring you guys back and have a hearing on the same on the improvement. But Representative Fritz.
Well, absolutely. I would be more than willing to help. And because in nursing we do have anatomy, and there are RNs and LPNs working in the podiatry clinics that are in my district that are doing these x-rays, and I am interested in having them continue to do them in the chiropractors' offices as well. So I have an, I have a vested interest in this for my nurses.
Any other questions or tests? State your name and the people you represent. And
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dominic Scuzzetto. I represent the Minnesota Dental Association, and I just want to speak to the amendment that was originally discussed. It's very clear after listening to the discussion that there is no intent of regulating those that do dental radiographs. The problem is with the existing language on the exemption. It refers to those people that are hold a Minnesota license to practice dentistry and dental hygiene. However, dental assistants are registered. They're not licensed. They are regulated by the board. They do have the education that is part of their training. So that was the reason we wanted to add the registered dental assistants, because we didn't think it fit with the current exemption.
Okay. Maybe we could hold this amendment and continue
Chair,
to work on it first.
Can I just ask a question? Even though, because if they're under the Board of Dentistry already, they're exempt. But if you want it to be clarified to that, that's what it says in the statute.
Mr. Chairman, I guess the way I was reading it, the exemption says we're a state of Minnesota licensed to practice
I
don't think it's a big issue, but I think the better way to do it would be those regulated under the Board of Dentistry if that was the intent.
Representative O'Trendle?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's in the statute, but if he needs to have it out of it, and I think some of the statutes might be part rule that we need to take out and change anyway when we looked at the statutes, so we can look at that.
Okay.
Because under the, you're basically, if you're under the Board of Dentistry, you're okay. But if you want to make it more clear, we could make it more clear.
This might be another section where we need to continue to work on.
Yeah, because it kind of, Mr. Chair, it in statute, it says one thing in one place and one place and the other. So.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hamilton.
I'm just curious then, is there any issue for us, or why can we not pass this amendment as it is currently?
If the committee wants to, we can. I just think that since there's still a lot of work on many other sections, this could be also included in this working session where it comes back to the committee, and then we could have further discussion. But if the members of the committee wants to move this forward, I'm okay with that as well.
Question for Representative Tremba.
Representative Hamilton.
Do you have an issue with moving this amendment? That way it doesn't get forgotten about as we move forward?
Representative Tremba.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, I don't really have a problem. I just know that I think there's some conflicting statutes, quite frankly, that probably should be cleaned up anyway. So whether or not this is the right wordage or not, we can do it and then fix it if it doesn't work, because absolutely it says something different on two different statutes.
So, Mr. Chair, can I move the amendment? Or I would move the amendment?
Sure. Representative Hamilton moves amendment 645A1. Is there any discussion on it? I guess regardless whether we move it or not, this section is going to get cleaned up anyway.
Yeah.
But
the discussion part is, my understanding is that inserting it where it says to in the amendment doesn't quite make sense, because it talks about Minnesota licensed to practice and they're not licensed. And so it's included in a list of professions that are licensed and they're actually not licensed. So there's a little problem with adding it here as it's currently written in the rest of the paragraph. That's the problem.
Well, Mr. Chair, like I said, it's covered under the Board of Dentistry, and I didn't draft this because I was... it looked like something that they wanted to clean up, but I do think we need to go much deeper into those statutes. Maybe some of those are rules that we should be repealing. I'm not a lawyer, but I do know that there was a conflict.
I agree with Representative Trump as well. I think we should not put this in there and confuse people more, I guess.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw that. my motion.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, I highlighted it here so I won't forget it.
Well, we'll continue to work on. Representative Hamilton has withdrawn the amendment. Representative Abel.
This has rulemaking in it. Does this have to go to GovOps then, too? That's it. I know usually they do.
I don't.
Because that's it's in the House rules. I was just curious if that's the case. We could send this off and then bring it back to here, which gives it time to work on. It could handle the rulemaking question and blink it out of there. Maybe staff can comment about it if it has to go to GovOps.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I think we should work on it a little bit before we decide whether or not we have to go to GovOps, if that's okay.
Sure. What's your schedule for your omnibus? I'm just trying to keep it on track so you don't lose ground on it.
Right at the last minute, I guess.
Oh, then we have plenty of time. So we have plenty of time.
But right now, this is the first hearing. We're going to have plenty of time.
Okay.
I think I'm probably going to bring this back, and we'll have another full hearing on it, so all the issues that are brought up here could be addressed. And if it needs to move to rules at that moment.
Yes, staff can check on that.
Yeah, we could do that on that day as well.
This has so much time. Great.
Yeah. Are there any more questions, comments from the audience? Representative Tremba, Ms. Coster.
Mr. Chairman, just very briefly, our intent is to make sure that anyone who takes x-rays has the proper background to do so. And we're willing to work with anyone to get from point A to point B. It's critical that these x-ray operators have the capability to demonstrate knowledge in not only anatomy and pathology, but positioning the patient and exposure factors and those kinds of things as well. So we look forward to working on this and perfecting it if we need to be involved. And we look forward to it. Thank you.
I look forward to having more meetings with your group to further work on these issues. I encourage you to work with Represent Fritz and Abler as well. Any questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, if there's
Tremble?
Anybody else on the committee that would like to work with us, we're more than willing to have that happen.
Good. Okay. All right. Thank you for coming. There's no more bills on the calendar. I think we have another meeting next week, I believe. The next meeting, we're very aggressive, Jim. It's February 26th, 6:30 p.m. at 300 North, the State Office Building. So the meeting is adjourned.